lead draft analyst for Pro Football Focus, Queen City guy, and he's on the Bryant Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. Mike, welcome back.
Thanks for having me on, fellas.
Yeah, good to talk with you. So we just got through having a little conversation about Jameis versus Cam right now. And, you know, everybody knows the risk with Cam. But let's take the risk out of it for a second and go with the hypothetical for this conversation that Cam has healed his shoulder and his foot, and he can be close to what he was. Is he heads above Jameis in your mind? Like, there's not even a conversation there, a choice, if you had one?
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, that's based off of the first half of 2018, what he looked like that year before the shoulder. It really wasn't even a competition. And if you're running an offense that's tailored to sort of Newton's strengths, I think you're going to get a far, far better, far higher floor than Winston's, because, I mean, he was in that – the Tampa Bay Bucs offense had a lot of talent, you know, around him. It was about as good a situation as it possibly could have for Winston. Anywhere else he goes, realistically, is going to be a step down. So even a step worse of his play is a little concerning at this point, considering what we saw from last year.
So do you think this is kind of the end of Jameis, I guess, as a – or at least for the next year or two is of him as a surefire starter? Do you think there's anywhere where he could go and land and play immediately this year, or is this a situation where he's going to have to get lucky and hope that there'll be something that happens and he'll be able to end up getting a job through injury?
Yeah, I think we'll see, you know, almost like a Ryan Fitzpatrick-esque, and almost ironically, considering Fitzpatrick took his job a couple years ago, sort of arc to his career where kicks around from spot to spot, getting odd jobs, and just never really puts it all together, because he really hasn't developed since the guy we saw really redshirt freshman year at Florida State. He's kind of has the same strengths and weaknesses that he's had all along, not really, you know, sort of smooth out those weaknesses, the picks and the bad decisions with the football. Those are still very present in this game. So I do think this is kind of the end of the starter. And then you kind of have to factor in the off-field just probably playing – a big role in this, that not a lot of people are going to want to make him, you know, the face of their franchise, give him the starting job, given all the sort of off-field issues surrounding him.
So much to get to with the draft prospects, and boy, it sounds and it looks so deep with receiver. And I guess I'll ask you point blank. I mean, we know kind of the guys up top with CD and Jerry Jeudy. Where does this thing kind of drop off after, like, how many guys do you think could go in the first round?
That's an interesting question that I've kind of debated back and forth on with a number of people, and that truthfully I think there are about seven guys I would put first round grades on, like, if I would feel comfortable drafting in the first round. I don't think seven end up going. I think you see more like six probably end up going first round, five or six end up going. I feel really strongly about CeeDee Lamb, Jerry Jeudy, Henry Ruggs, and Justin Jefferson going in the first round. After that, I'm not sure there's one guy I could tell you is definitely going to be a first rounder. I think Denzel Mims ends up there, the Baylor wide receiver, after what he did at the Senior Bowl, after what he did at the Combine. But there's no other guy I think you could see a very similar to what we saw last year, in that teams will pass in the first round of the wide receiver class, knowing that middle of the second, late in the second, you can still get quality players like we saw with A.J. Brown, D.K. Metcalf, Terry McLaurin last year.
No, that always happens. You even look at back, I believe, in the 2015 draft where Michael Thomas was the sixth receiver taken and ultimately ended up being the best out of all of them. You know, I guess every year that people try to quantify, like, the actual number of, you know, top-end, top-tier players, like first guys with first-round grades. And not the guys are taking the first round, because there's going to be 32 taken this year regardless, but how many pure first-round grades would you have you given out this year when you're looking at the draft prospects?
Yeah, first-round grades is always difficult to, you know, make that cutoff. I gave, I think it was 27 pure, like, guys I would be like, I feel good taking them in the first round. And then there were kind of, I think, like, seven or eight guys that were, if you draft them in the first round, I'm not going to really argue, but that they were, like, first, second round, that sort of range that I had grades on. So I think that's a pretty deep class compared to normally. Normally, it's not a lot. You rarely get to 32 that you really feel comfortable saying, you know, first round, because if you call a guy first rounder, they better be a pretty darn good starter at, you know, not year one, if not year two.
Let's kind of get in the dirt here and talk about Jonah Jackson, the kid that came into Ohio State And certainly, you know, when we saw where he was coming from, it was like, that's kind of interesting. From Rutgers, 4 years at Rutgers, and decides to change schools for his final year of eligibility. Boy, how much did that help him?
I think a lot. And just playing on an offensive line with talent around him is an easier evaluation, you know, for scouts and GMs to basically see an offense that's going to look a lot more like an NFL offense and not an offense that's getting railroaded every weekend. So I do think it helped him a ton. I have the second interior offensive lineman on our board right now. I call him the biggest sleeper in this draft class, and that I think he can start from day one and be a quality guard option. I would draft him somewhere in the second round. He probably doesn't go off the board until maybe third, fourth at this point, but he's just so good in pass protection. He might not have the physical tools and look really the part like some of these other guys in the class, but he just gets the job done, whether it was at Rutgers or this past year at Ohio State.
We're talking with Mike Renner of Pro Football Focus about the NFL draft here on Carpenter and Rothman on the Brian Heating Cooling Systems fan guest hotline. And, you know, Mike, when we've talked a lot about the receivers. Everyone's talking about the quarterbacks, Burrow, the presumptive number one, Tua, where does he fit in? Justin Herbert's getting a lot of play, but Jordan Love is a guy that is kind of polarizing, where some people really like him, some people dislike him. His 2018 tape is obviously better than his 2019 tape when, you know, a lot of his teammates had left and graduated and moved on. Where do you fall in on Jordan Love about his ceiling and floor and what he could potentially be?
Yeah, I'm really low on him. I just think he's got so far to go to hit that, you know, ceiling, quote-unquote ceiling, that really no one really knows what it is for any sort of prospect. But I just think with his decision-making, and it's not just the decision-making. If it were just bad decisions, like we saw Sam Darnold throw a bunch of picks his last year at USC. We saw Deshaun Watson throw a bunch of picks his last year at Clemson. If it was just that, it would be – you could kind of excuse it away with the new regime there this past year, not a lot of talent offensively. But he just flat-out misses a lot of throws. Like, he misses a lot of easy throws, and his accuracy is just all over the map. And there's just too many things for me to fix to where I'm going to bank on that, you know, quote-unquote upside, that potential to draft in the first round. I just think he's so far away from realizing that. To me, he reminds me a lot of DeShone Kizer coming out, where the sort of the tantalizing throws are always way more than the game-to-game and down-to-down consistency.
All right, let's hit you with the Tua question. The medical evaluations were critical. If you believe what he says and what the latest doctor says, at least he's at the best point he can be right now, and that's without being hit, without, you know, putting on the pads and all of that. Of course, teams aren't going to take his word for it. So what happens? I mean, he's going to get drafted in a few weeks, and teams, I guess, have to take a certain word for it. How big of a leap is this in your mind? How big of a gamble?
Yeah, I think what it's going to be is you're going to have to get an MRI, like, the week of the draft. And he's going to have to get an MRI and send that results out to the NFL team doctors, because like you said, no one's going to take his word for it that, oh, I feel great, or his agent's word for it, or some highlight video he posts on Twitter. That's just not going to be enough for these NFL teams to risk, you know, a top five pick in the NFL draft. But I do think he's worth the risk. And at this point, you know, this was kind of the end of the window of complications arising for that hip injury. And so if he is 100% by it, the chances are a good chance that he will be 100% by the start of the season. So I'm willing to take that risk. I mean, any other year, if he's fully healthy, or even if he's not fully healthy, I think any other year, if Joe Burrow doesn't exist, he's the one going number one overall here. So he's that good of a prospect. So I'm the Dolphins, I'm the Chargers. I'm willing to give up a lot to go up and try to get him.
Well done, Mike Renner. Always good catching up with you, man. Enjoy the next couple weeks and the build-up, and hopefully we'll get you back soon. Thank you, Mike.
For sure, fellas. Thanks for having me on.